There's a twisted Japanese folktale called Kachi Kachiyama. In it, an old man catches a tricky tanuki, a raccoon dog. He then ties it to a tree to kill and cook it later. When the old man leaves, the tanuki promises his wife he'll help her if she sets him free. She does so, but the tanuki kills her. The tanuki then cooks a soup with her flesh, shapeshifts to disguise himself as the wife, and serves the soup to the husband. The tanuki then taunts him as a, quote, flesh-eating old man. But it turns out that a rabbit was a good friend of the couple. The rabbit challenges the tanuki to a life-or-death boat race. The rabbit carves its boat out of a tree trunk, but the foolish tanuki makes his boat out of mud. The race in the lake starts out as nip and tuck, but then the mud boat starts to dissolve in the middle of the lake. And then, well, here's a clip from Bilingual English.
The raccoon's mud boat fell apart and began sinking.
Stop it! I'm sinking!
You tricked the old woman, cooked her, and had Grandpa eat it. This is payback. Take that!
The raccoon went glug, 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 and together with his mud boat, he sunk to the bottom of the sea.
So yeah, pretty twisted, but also pretty popular. For instance, the Shokoku Tanuki Train Line railway station in Japan still uses the slogan, "Our trains aren't made of mud," a clear reference to the folktale. And the moral of the story is that our bad deeds will always come back to bite us, making us sink in our own boat made of mud. At trial, the state's claim was that Amanda Lewis had sunken herself in her own boat made of mud by failing to cover her footprints in the wake of drowning her daughter Adriana. But looking back, it appears that both a literal and figurative boat of mud show that Amanda was wrongfully convicted, with the prosecution misleading its own expert as well as the jury to secure a conviction.
Hi, and welcome back to Undisclosed, Toward Justice, the state versus Amanda Lewis. My name is Rabia Chaudhry. I'm an attorney and author, and I'm here with my colleague, Colin Miller.
Hi, this is Colin Miller. I'm a professor at the University of South Carolina School of Law, and I blog at Evidence Prof Blog. This is the fifth episode of our deep dive series into the case of Amanda Lewis. Amanda was convicted of the 2007 drowning death of her 7-year-old daughter Adriana, and she's been in prison ever since.
Let's start by resetting the scene of the drowning. The family's Sand and Sun Easy Set pool was located behind and somewhat to the side of the trailer. When the first responders arrived to the scene of the drowning, the kids' red wagon and one of their bikes were standing side by side right next to the pool. The pool itself was circular, with an 18-foot diameter, and the circular ring at the top of the pool's perimeter was 4 feet off the ground. Finally, after Adriana was pulled from the pool, the water was measured at 32 inches deep on one end and 35.5 inches deep on the other side, because the pool sat on a slight slope. But the water in the pool wasn't the only water in the area. This takes us to the literal meaning of a boat of mud in this case. At trial, during cross-examination, Amanda's boyfriend, Alan Carnley, testified as follows with regard to him reinflating and refilling the pool because it had been taken down after Adriana drowned.
Isn't it true that although you put the pool in about the same place, there was more water in this pool in these photographs than it was when Adriana drowned in that pool?
Well, I'm sure, sir, because when the pool was leaned into by Adriana, some of the water came out. There was water in the wagon, if I'm not mistaken.
How do you know Adriana leaned into that pool, sir?
Well, I wasn't there, but that's pretty much what I believe happened. Yes, sir.
Now, Prosecutor Larry Basford is right that this was sheer speculation by Alan Carnley, but you can see how he reached that result. If there was water in the wagon, that would be consistent with Adriana standing in the wagon to scoop bugs and then falling in when she leaned over. Because, as we noted last episode, by leaning on the pool with even minimal force, its wall would collapse and water would flow out. And Alan wasn't the only one who used this reasoning to reach this result. Here's more of his testimony on this topic during redirect.
If you got back in August, was it wet or dry out there at your place?
It was wet. Okay. All around the wagon area. And
I mean, the day that this happened?
Yes, sir. That's right. What I'm talking about, yes.
Okay, was the ground around it wet?
Yes, sir, it was.
Okay. Did you point that out to the police officers?
Well, a lot of folks pointed out when we first got there, you know, look at the wagon and the bicycle up against the pool. And that morning I left, it wasn't there, sir.
Right.
Neither one of the items were there the morning I left.
The Chief Corcoran pointed out to the police
Yes,
officer.
Sir, because he was one of the first responders there.
Did he think it was important?
Yes, sir, he did.
Thank you.
And we've noted before what first responder Charles Corcoran concluded when he arrived at the drowning site. Specifically,
in the photos of the pool, you see a wagon and you see a bicycle. It was my assumption at that point that the child was up on either of those two toys. That type of a pool has no resistance when you put weight on it. It's water supported. My assumption was she went over the side of the pool, went down, hit her head, and came back up.
Alan Carnley and Charles Corcoran weren't the only ones who made note of the water in the wagon. So did Michael Raley, the lead agent on the case. Raley actually brought a 35mm camera to the crime scene so he could take photos. Those photos then took center stage when defense counsel questioned him at trial.
When you got out there, did you see a little red wagon up next to the pool?
That's where I robbed the wagon, sir.
It was actually touching the pool.
It was up on, I believe, so I had to look and see. It was eight bucks.
So this picture depicts exactly how the wagon was when you got out there.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I want to show you one, defense 1B, and I believe this, a smaller version of this may already be in evidence. This is a picture of the red wagon again. Mm-hmm. What is this under the wagon? What is this dark material in the wagon?
Water.
Looks like water. And was there water also inside the wagon?
There was some water standing on top of the dirt, yes.
And so it was basically mud in the wagon?
Yes.
In his police statement, Amanda's son AJ said that he had filled the wagon with dirt. Of course, this leaves the question of how the dirt turned to mud. So, with the following line of questions, defense counsel tried to establish that the only way that could have happened was if water had spilled over the side of the pool when Adriana was leaning into it.
My question is, was there a hose anywhere around here where you could put water in that wagon?
Not by the pool.
Any other that rained that day?
I don't remember that. I don't recall it raining.
It doesn't look like it's rained out there, does it? And again, this is defense 1C, and does this better depict or show the water underneath the wagon?
Yes, sir, you see the water or some sort of liquid there, yes.
And this is good to be about the same picture, but 1D also shows water under the wagon, correct?
Correct.
And then this would be 1E. So a picture of the wagon looking down on the wagon, right?
Yes.
And you took that picture?
Yes.
And this appears to be basically mud in the wagon?
Yes.
And then this shows the water under the wagon?
Yes.
And then all of this back and forth led up to these final two questions.
Do you have any explanation for how that water got in this wagon and on the tarp underneath the wagon?
No.
Would you ever investigate and try to figure out how that water got in there?
No one ever responded much.
Now, in fairness, Prosecutor Larry Basford tried to provide such an explanation during his questioning of both Alan Carnley and Michael Raley. In both cases, the questions focused on the same thing.
Now, isn't it true that the defendant, Amanda Lewis, told you AJ ran out to the pool, jumped in the wagon, and was raking at something in there?
Yes, sir, he was raking at something in the pool.
And of course, AJ testified to something similar at trial.
Did you try to help her?
Yes, sir.
What did you do?
Hanged onto the legs.
You hung onto the ledge?
And so, you can see the competing narratives that the sides were trying to sell to the jury. According to the defense, Adriana was in the wagon trying to scoop out bugs. But when she leaned forward, the poolside collapsed, water spilled into the wagon and she fell into the pool. Meanwhile, the state countered that Amanda threw Adriana into the pool and drowned her. And in this theory, the water in the wagon and on the ground around it came from AJ standing in the wagon and trying to pull Adriana out after the fact. Now, at this point, you may be wondering, was AJ's shirt sopping wet when he went to get Alan Michael from the shower to tell him that Adriana had drowned? The answer is no. Alan Michael mentioned nothing about AJ's shirt being wet, nor did the police officers who spoke to AJ shortly after the drowning and before he got into the car with his grandmother's husband. Nor did AJ say in his police statement or at trial that he got wet at all when grabbing Adriana's legs or otherwise trying to get her out. Here's how Amanda testified to this issue at trial.
When you looked out and you saw AJ standing in that wagon, was there any water coming over the pool at that time?
No, sir, there wasn't.
Did AJ get wet at all?
No, sir.
Did he have to change his clothes?
No, sir.
So no, AJ raking Adriana in the pool should not have caused the tidal wave of water that came out of the pool and drenched both the wagon as well as the ground below.
Now, while AJ's shirt wasn't wet, what about his feet? If you go through Michael Raley's investigative report, he noted the following. The wagon was full of dirt and water was standing inside the wagon. Small footprints were observed in the dirt along with a broken brown bottle. But you don't have to take Raley's word for it. Instead, the photos very clearly show small footprints in the mud in the wagon. So who left those footprints? Adriana or AJ or both of them? Because, of course, if any of those small footprints came from Adriana, it would strongly support the defense theory that Adriana was standing in the wagon when she leaned over the pool and fell in. Now, as we'll note in a future episode, the state was very focused on prints in this case. Not footprints, but fingerprints. Specifically, they wanted to know whether Adriana's fingerprints were on a spray bottle to support AJ's story that Adriana was dunked for spraying something she wasn't supposed to spray. Now, of course, fingerprints cannot be dated, but footprints in a muddy wagon that was filled with dirt before the drowning can certainly be time-stamped. Unfortunately, despite the clear relevance of this issue, no. The state never tried to determine whether the footprints were the same size as Adriana or AJ's feet. Now, that's not to say that Adriana's footprints in the wagon would completely prove Amanda's innocence. You might recall that one version of AJ's story involved Amanda pulling the wagon to the pool, telling Adriana to scoop bugs out of the water, and then drowning her when she refused.
Did Mama go outside while y'all were out today? What'd she do?
Just moving my wagon. And then when she kept on moving my way, she told Adriana to scoop out the bugs out the pool. And then maybe she did it, so my don't do.
AJ and the state dropped the story at trial. But it does seem to be the likeliest scenario if the state is still clinging to the claim that Amanda is guilty. After all, it's the only real theory that accounts for the wagon being by the pool other than Adriana wheeling the wagon over herself. But let's break this theory down. In it, Amanda tells Adriana to scoop bugs out of the pool. Adriana then steps in the wagon and starts scooping, leading some water spilling out of the pool and into the wagon. But then, Adriana refuses to scoop out bugs anymore, so Amanda grabs her and throws her in the pool by the wagon, dunking her face underwater, leading to even more water pouring out. One clear problem with this is the bulge at the bottom of the pool. As we noted last episode, because the pool bulged at the bottom, Amanda, or Alan in his reenactment, would need to lean forward and fully extend their arm to drown Adriana. There's no way that Amanda could have stood behind the wagon and done this because she'd have been too far away from the pool. And if she shifted to the left, the bicycle was right next to the wagon and would have been another obstacle. So the only way this works, if it works at all, is if Amanda stands to the right of the wagon and dunks Adriana while flush with the pool and leaning forward over the bulge. But there's a big issue with this. AJ's drawing of the drowning. We first told you about this drawing during episode 1. It was the one that AJ did during therapy with Lynette Hornsby.
On January 24th, I was seeing AJ during a therapy session, and AJ and I were reading a book termed Braveheart, and it's about getting over being frightened or scared. And I asked him, could he tell me of a time he had been scared? And he shook his head no. and I was not able to get him to talk that much that day. And I asked him, would he be willing to draw a picture of a time he was scared? And I offered him a piece of construction paper and a box of crayons, and he began drawing, and he completed that picture for me.
Now, as we noted at the time, AJ drew himself in the garbage can tray along with the words, can't see, which is consistent with AJ not being able to see the pool from the tree. And as we noted in a later episode, that drawing shows Amanda drowning Adriana with her right hand, not her left hand, although we had experts noting that hand selection in a drawing or reenactment by a child doesn't really mean much. But what's maybe more important than the hand being used is where Amanda and Adriana are in the drawing of the drowning.
Did you know that at any time, it is estimated that a staggering 5% of all prisoners are wrongfully incarcerated? I'm Michael Simanchik, Executive Director of the Innocence Center and host of the podcast For the Innocent. We tell the stories of those who have been unjustly imprisoned, exploring the factors that led to their wrongful convictions and the tireless efforts required to bring them home. We believe that by sharing these powerful narratives, we can raise awareness and advocate for meaningful change. Check out Season 3 of For the Innocent to hear our latest episode with Amanda Knox and more exoneree stories. Follow For the Innocent on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever podcasts are found.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
CODA salutes those who've served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.
Hi everybody, Rabia here. I am so excited to tell you, if you haven't heard yet, that Undisclosed finally has a Patreon. Our Patreon is where you will find all kinds of perks like ad-free episodes, a bonus episode every month where Colin and I answer all your questions, and also you're going to find perks like early access to our limited merch drops, which are going to start happening twice a year, as well as the ability to get on a Zoom call with me once a month, face-to-face, to live discuss any true crime case that you guys are obsessed with and really want to go through. And I love having a place to talk about that stuff because I need people to talk about it with. But if you're not in it for the perks and you're in it for the justice and you just want to support our work, I would really ask you to please sign up for the dollar a month tier. And the perk there is just good karma and warm fuzzies and being in the fight for justice for these defendants, because if everybody chips in a dollar a month, our work can be funded for another decade to come. So check out the Undisclosed Patreon by going to patreon.com/undisclosedpod. Again, it's patreon.com/undisclosedpod. And I hope to see you all there. Thank you for supporting our work for a decade. And please stay with us so we can do this for years to come.
Let's start with AJ. He drew himself at the top of the drawing, in the garbage can tree. The pool was then below him in the drawing. As we noted, it's a circular pool, so form a mental picture in your head of the pool as a clock. In other words, the top center of the pool would be 12 o'clock. As we said, AJ couldn't see the pool from the garbage can tree, but prosecutor Larry Basford tried to claim that AJ got down from the tree and saw the drowning from the corner of the trailer. You might recall that the pool was behind and somewhat to the side of the trailer. Specifically, it was behind and to the right of the trailer if you're looking at it from the street or from the corner of the trailer. So again, the top center of the pool is 12 o'clock. You'd be moving right to go counterclockwise to 11 o'clock and then 10 o'clock. And the photos of the pool show the wagon at about 10 o'clock. In other words, the wagon was on the far side of the pool, away from the trailer. This then takes us to the million-dollar question. In the drawing, is Amanda drowning Adriana at about 10 o'clock on the pool/clock in the drawing? And the answer is absolutely not. Instead, Amanda is between 2 and 3 o'clock. In other words, instead of being on the far side of the pool where the wagon was, in the drawing, Amanda is standing on the near side of the pool, closest to the trailer. And guess what? This is where Amanda says she pulled Adriana from the pool and where she was performing CPR on her when the first responders arrived.
Were you standing in the wagon?
No, I was standing on the ground. And the side that I was on, the pool's not even. So it was kind of leaning that way, and I just leaned over.
Did you pull her out where about where the wagon's at, or on that side?
No, on the other side. The wagon was here, and I pulled her out right here.
Kind of where she was laying, that area?
For me, this is where all the pieces of the puzzle finally come together. AJ didn't see his mother drowning Adriana in the pool by the wagon. What he saw, and what he drew, was his mom pulling Adriana out of the pool from the side that didn't have the wagon and starting to perform CPR. And indeed, this fits with audio we previously played where it seemed like AJ was trying to make sense of what he saw and didn't see.
That's my mama, doctor.
Tell me about that.
I can't see it because it was going to be dangerous. So Michael took me in the house when Adriana was dead on the ground because Mom pulled her out the pool.
So this is what we think happened. AJ saw his mom pull Adriana out of the pool and perform CPR. In AJ's mind, this was his mom dunking Adriana first time. Then, Amanda sent AJ to get Alan Jr. from the shower, which both AJ and Alan Jr. agreed happened. Then, while AJ was inside, because he thought his mother had dunked Adriana first time, he assumed she had drowned her again. This is why in this clip, he says he didn't see the drowning because his mom sent him inside to get Alan Jr. And so, this is why we're here 18 years later. AJ thought he saw his mother trying to drown his sister when he really saw his mom trying to save her. This is the literal meaning of a boat made of mud in this case. The mud in the wagon tells us that Adriana fell in from the far side of the pool while trying to scoop bugs, and the way AJ saw was his mom trying to save Adriana from the near side of the pool.
This then takes us to the figurative meaning of a boat made of mud. The state's boat taking on water after all these years, because it was never built out of solid materials. To use another analogy, we now know that the state's theory was a house of cards built upon a single shocking lie. To get there, we have to return to the last episode. Now, as you'll recall, by the time of the autopsy, there was a bruise on Adriana's left cheek and dense, linear, vertical bruises on Adriana's forehead. This led to Lisa Ruckman's theory that these bruises came from Amanda's left hand dunking Adriana underwater. There was also bruising on Adriana's right shoulder, which the state tried to claim came from Amanda restraining Adriana with her right hand while she dunked her. Now, if you're trying to form a mental image of Amanda face to face with Adriana and grabbing her face with her left hand and then her right shoulder with her right hand, well, don't worry, we'll get to that. In the last episode, we went through and explained how Amanda, in all likelihood, could not have caused the bruising to Adriana's face with her left hand. At trial, the state tried to do something similar with regard to Adriana's bruising. The state's goal was to convince the jury that none of the first responders or medical professionals who treated Adriana could have caused these bruises, meaning they had to have been made by Amanda. Here's Prosecutor Larry Basford laying this out in his opening statement.
We intend to call each and every person who touched or had contact with Adriana that day and let them tell you not only what they did to try to save her life, but also what they observed from the first person who got there until the last person that tried to save her life.
So let's go through some of that using a timeline. Again, our estimate is that Adriana fell in the pool between 2:27 and 2:28 p.m., and Amanda pulled her out of the water about 2:35 p.m. Amanda then started performing CPR and called 911 at about 2:36 p.m. 911 contacted Emergency Medical Services at 2:38 p.m. and the Esto Fire Department at 2:39 p.m. In turn, three Esto firefighters arrived 3 minutes later at 2:42 p.m. As noted in episode 1, firefighter Gary Jacobs was the very first to arrive, and he came upon Amanda performing CPR on Adriana.
I was first pulled in the chief and then Jose.
Can you tell the jury what you saw when you arrived on the scene?
Yes, sir. We got there, Amanda was down with a little girl. That meant she was trying to give her CPR.
Jacobs was at Adriana's feet while the other first responders performed CPR, but he said he had a good look at Adriana's face and he didn't see any bruising.
Now, Mr. Jacobs, I understand that you testified that you were at the feet of the child. Yes. Did you notice any injuries to the child?
No, sir. No bruises or anything.
Is it fair to say that you weren't up near the face or head area of the child?
I could see it good.
Okay.
Jacobs also testified that he didn't see any bruising on Adriana's right shoulder.
Here is obviously a picture of a shoulder. Did you notice any injuries like that to the victim?
Jacobs was also clear that he didn't cause any of the bruising on Adriana that was later seen.
All right. Mr. Jacobs, in what you did that day on scene, and you told us you were just there at the victim's feet, would you have done anything to cause those type of injuries to that child?
Me?
Yes, sir.
No, sir.
Finally, Jacobs testified that he didn't see anyone else doing anything that would have caused the bruising.
Question was, did you see anybody do anything that would have caused those injuries?
No, sir.
A second firefighter and first responder was Jose Martinez. He helped Chief Charles Corcoran with CPR and testified at trial that Adriana only had one small pink bruise on her forehead at the time.
You said the only thing you noticed, you said that there was a pink mark on her forehead.
Yeah.
Right.
Little okay. One, yes.
When he was shown the picture of the post-mortem bruises that Lisa Ruckman claimed could have come from Amanda's left hand, Martinez said that he didn't see any of them at the time of treatment.
Mr. Martinez, can you use those photographs to show the jury which of any of those bruises you saw when you first arrived, sir?
None of them.
Where would have been the bruise that you saw, sir?
It was right here. But it was real light that you hardly could see it, not the way it is now. I mean, that I see it now.
Martinez also testified that he didn't see bruising on Adriana's shoulder and that nothing he or anyone else did could have caused that bruising on Adriana's face or shoulder.
Did you do anything to cause any of those bruises?
No, sir.
Did you see anyone in your presence do anything to cause those to her forehead or over on her left cheek?
No, sir.
And then finally, sir, the last photograph in this exhibit. Did you observe any of those bruises on the little girl?
No, sir.
And again, same question. Did you do anything or did you see anyone in your presence, whether it was the chief, Mr. Cook, or any of the other paramedics, do anything that would have caused those?
No, sir.
That takes us to Chief Charles Corcoran, the person primarily performing CPR. Like Jose Martinez, when he arrived, all he saw was a small circular bruise in Adriana's forehead at the hairline that wasn't like the bruising that Lisa Ruckman later saw.
When you first saw her, you recall seeing a circular bruise, is that right?
Circular and at the hairline and more of what would be described as a linear pattern parallel to the hairline, parallel to the eyebrow line.
So you don't recognize the bruise that you saw in these photographs?
No, I saw no bruising of that nature.
This then led to a critical Q&A. Prosecutor Larry Basford asking Charles Corcoran whether he could have caused the bruises to Adriana's forehead that lined up with Lisa Ruckman's left hand.
Then 4E, did you do anything to cause those injuries, sir?
No, I did not do anything that would produce those injuries.
If you're taking notes, drop a flag here because we'll definitely return to this later. Now, beyond the bruising on the face, Charles Corcoran also testified regarding Adriana's neck and shoulders.
And you didn't see any on her shoulders. You didn't have an opportunity to see her shoulder yourself at that point, did you? Or her neck area, did you, sir?
Yes, I did have opportunity to see that.
Did you see any bruises at that time?
No, I did not see any bruises. And when I lifted up the shoulder, I had, she had on a tank top type of a t-shirt. I lifted it up. I exposed the entire chest area from whatever the pants line was to the top to get my landmarks. And when I hyperextend the neck, when you place your hand under, you're looking at the neck to make sure you have the correct anatomical position.
Of course, as we said, Adriana did eventually have bruising on her right shoulder. And this was the one instance where someone said they could have caused the bruising to Adriana, although Corcoran was still skeptical.
And 4H, sir, you indicated that you had held her up a little bit and turned her on her right side to try to get any water out of her body. Did you do anything that could have caused this injury to Adriana's right shoulder?
That is a possibility, but I doubt that anything I did would produce that type of an injury.
After the three firefighters performed CPR for a few minutes, they were relieved by the father-son team of Travis Cook and Larry Cook. Travis was an EMT, while Larry was a volunteer firefighter who owned a tire shop, which is where they got the call about the drowning. When Travis arrived to take over CPR, he didn't notice any injuries in Adriana.
What was the condition of the child when you arrived?
She was very, very pale. Her lips were purple. Just lifeless.
Yeah. Did you notice any injuries on her at that time, sir?
Not at that time.
But according to Travis, after performing some CPR and Adriana getting some color back, he saw the same bruise seen by the first responders, now a bit bigger.
I'd have to say after a second round of chest compressions and rest and rest, she did gain some color back. That's when my father and I both noticed a pretty large bruise on her head, on her forehead, about center way, sort of a semicircle shape, best I can remember.
When shown photos of the bruising on Adriana's shoulder and the other bruises on her face, Travis only recalled the one at the center of her forehead.
What about the other bruise there, sir, over here to the side? Was that bruise visible when you first got there, sir?
Not when I first got there, no, sir.
Did you see that bruise that day?
I don't remember. The only one I remember is the large one in the center of the forehead.
Did you do anything? Let me show you these other photographs, sir. This would be photograph 4E. And again, if you would point out the area where you saw the bruise, sir, that day.
Right there.
And finally, photograph 4H. Did you see that bruise that day?
No, sir.
All right. I don't even know if her top was on or off at the time that you saw her, sir.
Directly after asking about these facial and shoulder bruises, Larry Bassford confirmed with Travis that neither he nor anyone he saw had caused them.
My question to you is, did you do anything to cause any of these bruises and these three photographs that we've shown you, sir?
Or less, sir.
Did you see anybody in your presence do anything to this child's forehead or the shoulder in your presence that may have caused these type of bruises or injuries to this child?
Travis's father, Larry, also testified that he only saw the semicircular bruise in Adriana's forehead and not any other bruising to her face or shoulder.
Here's the pencil, and can you indicate to us the area where you noticed the bruising or the injury, sir?
That one right there, that semicircle.
That one?
Mm-hmm.
The other ones were not visible to you when you got there, sir?
No.
Photograph 4E?
Same thing.
Now, when you say the same thing, are you talking about this one too, or this one right over here, sir?
This is what I noticed. It looked in, to me, more of a semicircle when I first noticed it. That's what stuck out. I didn't understand what that was.
Then finally, 4H.
Did you notice that one, or how did I know if her top was pulled down like that?
And like his son, Larry testified that nothing he did or saw anyone do would have caused this bruising on Adriana's face or shoulder.
While this child was in your care, sir, did you do anything that would have caused those bruises?
Absolutely not.
Did you see anyone, whether it was your son or the chief or Greg Barton, Shay McCormick, do anything that would have caused those type of injuries, sir?
No.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.
After this treatment by father and son, an ambulance arrived with paramedic supervisor Greg Barton and EMT Shay McCormick. And while it might seem like a lot of time had passed, it hadn't. Chief Corcoran and the first responders were on the scene at about 2:42 p.m., and the ambulance arrived a mere 7 minutes later at 2:49 p.m. Starting with Greg Barton, as we noted in Episode 1, Greg Barton was able to restore a heartbeat for Adriana. And like everyone before him, he saw the same semicircular or circular bruise on Adriana's forehead, but now it had a line in the middle of it.
And in this position right here, I have a tube that I passed through, and from right here there was a bruise just left of center on her forehead that had a line running through it.
But you look at these photographs here, sir?
Yes.
Start off with 4B. Do you use the pencil to indicate the area or where you saw that bruise, or if that bruise is visible in this photograph?
Yes, sir. It looks a little different right now. You can see this line that's running right here. That was real prominent, but it was through a circular bruise that ran through it. It was about, my estimate was about an inch and a quarter. But this line right here, which is just left of center, it's a bad picture to show it. You got one that's more.
I believe we do, sir.
There you go.
Photograph 4E.
Barton did not see any other bruising on Adriana's face, and on cross-examination, defense counsel Walter Smith honed in on the line that Barton saw in the circle.
Barton, the single bruise on the forehead with the line through it, did you attribute any significance to that bruise?
No, sir.
It was just a bruise?
Right, it was just a bruise to me.
But when you saw it, it was basically a circular, a light area with a dark pencil line area in the middle of that.
Right. It was more prominent line bruise, but it was circular around it.
Okay. Is that the type of bruise you would see if somebody were hit with an object?
I couldn't tell.
I can't say.
No, sir. I couldn't say what it was from. I wouldn't make a guess what it was from. I don't know.
But that picture that's on the presenter up there, that looks different than the bruise you saw.
Yes, sir. The line is quite a bit wider than what it was, and the circular area around it is now dissipated.
It's kind of faded away.
Correct. Okay.
So what was Walter Smith setting up here? You might recall from episode one that Sarah Campbell from the Child Protection Team testified that AJ told her that he threw a white bucket at Adriana while she was lifeless in the pool. And so during closing, Smith tried to claim that this could have caused what Greg Barton saw.
I even asked him about the white bucket. You know, did you throw a white bucket at her? Well, apparently it's what he told the CPT person. Well, there's no white bucket in the picture. I don't know what he's talking about. But if he did throw something at his sister and he did hit her with it, then that would explain some bruising.
Beyond what Barton observed with the bruise with the line, he was clear, like the other witnesses, that he didn't cause any additional bruising to Adriana with his attempts to save her life.
Now, we've heard that there were aggressive techniques used to try to save the late Anna's life. Did that involve anything that could cause any additional injuries to her head or her face?
Absolutely not.
As noted, Greg Barton was accompanied by EMT Shay McCormick. Like Barton, McCormick saw the same circular bruise on Adriana's forehead with that vertical line running through it.
There was a bruise on the child's forehead. It was a little bit left to center. It was probably the size of a quarter. There was also a vertical small mark up and down the bruise of that injury.
And like all the other witnesses, McCormick saw nothing done to Adriana during treatment that would have caused any additional bruising.
Did you see anyone in your presence? Now, you saw that one. Did you see this other bruise? I'm going to show you one. Well, let's look at the one up there on the left side there, sir, as well as these over here. And we'll show you the photograph 4B. Did you see anyone in your presence, sir, do anything that would have caused these other bruises?
No, I did not.
There were three other individuals who were with Adriana during the same period of time. EMTs Mickey Locke and Terry Thompson, as well as paramedic supervisor Tammy Stafford. But they were barely with Adriana, and they all testified to the same bruise on the forehead and that they saw or did nothing that would have caused additional bruising. According to Greg Barton, after arriving at 2:49 p.m. and treating Adriana for about 10 minutes, they took her to the landing zone at 3:01 p.m. so that she could be medevaced via helicopter to Bay Medical in Panama City. Barton testified that the helicopter was already there, while flight paramedic Sharon Thomas testified that they arrived at 3:07 p.m. Now, this 6-minute discrepancy in timing isn't a big deal, but the substance of Thomas's testimony was. And here's why. She was the first witness who saw bruising on Adriana's right shoulder. Here, you can hear her consulting her notes while testifying at trial.
Contusions of the forehead was noted. And a hematoma, which is a bruise, is also noted on the right shoulder.
Even more importantly, when later shown a photo of the forehead bruises that Lisa Ruckman said lined up with her left hand, Sharon Thomas confirmed that she had seen them and didn't cause them.
And then I have this one other photograph 4B. Same questions as to that photograph and the injuries in that photograph, man.
These.
Those are the ones that you saw?
Yeah.
And did you, but any of the techniques that you did, whether it was securing this little girl's head, whether it was placing any tubes, placing any breathing devices in her, anything that could have caused those bruises while she was in your care?
No, sir.
Thomas was assisted on the helicopter by nurse Dawn Wybrew, who also testified seeing the bruising on Adriana's right shoulder and across her forehead.
Did you observe any injuries on this little girl at that time?
I did notice, and according to my charting, there was a hematoma or bruising on the top of the right shoulder, and there was also bruising on the forehead.
And like Sharon Thomas, Dawn Wybrew testified that she also didn't do anything to cause a bruising pattern that Lisa Ruckman later saw during the autopsy.
Now, ma'am, while this child was in your care, did you or did you see anyone perform any life-saving measures that would have caused these bruises to her forehead?
No.
Are you telling us that those bruises were there when you first observed the child?
Yes.
To break all this down, when Charles Corcoran and his crew arrived at 2:42 p.m., mere minutes after the drowning, Adriana only had a single small pink circular bruise at the hairline of her forehead and no bruising on her right shoulder. After Greg Barton and Shane McCormick arrived 7 minutes later at 2:49 p.m. and performed more CPR, that small circular bruise had grown in size and now had a vertical line running through it, but they didn't get a chance to see her shoulder. Then, between 3:01 and 3:07 p.m., Sharon Thomas and Don Wybrew arrived in the helicopter, and they both saw the shoulder bruising and the same bruising pattern that Lisa Ruckman saw during the autopsy. Now, the state called several other medical professionals who treated Adriana after she arrived at Bay Medical Center, but you likely know what they said, that the bruising on Adriana's face and shoulder was already there and that they did nothing that would have caused it. This takes us to closing arguments. Based on all the testimony you just heard, defense counsel Walter Smith anticipated that the state would claim Amanda had caused the bruising to Adriana's right shoulder when she drowned her. Here is what he told the jury.
And they're going to say, oh, well, she's got bruises on her right shoulder. So I guess they want you to believe that she's got her left hand over her face and her right hand over her shoulder, somehow leaning over the pool and holding her head under the water. That's the only way it could have happened.
You can't see Smith demonstrating this for the jury, but you can picture it in your head. For this to work, Amanda and Adriana have to be face to face. And for the state's theory to work, Amanda would need to be dunking Adriana by palming her face with her left hand. That would mean that Amanda's right arm would have to cross over or under her left arm to reach Adriana's right shoulder so she could restrain her and cause the bruising on it. This, of course, creates a few issues. First is that no one would do this. Instead, they would have their right hand on the victim's left shoulder if they were face to face. Second, we noted before how little force Amanda would generate given the bulge in the pool and the need to fully extend her arm. I mean, this is all physics. And if her right arm were over her left arm, there was no way she could have generated enough force to bruise Adriana's right shoulder. And if Amanda's right arm were below her left arm, then she could not have generated enough force with her left hand to bruise Adriana's face. That's even assuming that such force could be generated in the first place. Third, if Amanda were leaning forward with both her left and right arms to dunk Adriana, she would exert a lot more pressure on the pool, making it even more likely it would collapse. And this is all assuming that Adriana is not fighting back at all. And finally, recall that Amanda's shirt was barely wet at all when the EMTs arrived. Now, overall, this theory makes no sense. And that's likely why Larry Basford actually abandoned it during his rebuttal closing.
This bruise on the right shoulder? I'm not suggesting to you that that bruise got caused by the defendant. It may have, but you know, the chief, the first one there, told us that he took the girl and rolled her over on her shoulder and had her on the side. That could have caused that bruise.
This was a pretty major concession, because recall, the two other first responders both testified they didn't do or see Chief Charles Corcoran do anything that would have caused the shoulder bruising. And while Chief Corcoran did testify that he could have caused the shoulder bruising, recall that he was doubtful he did.
That is a possibility, but I doubt that anything I did would produce that type of an injury.
And so, if Charles Corcoran did cause the shoulder bruising, he did so despite the other two first responders saying he didn't cause it, and even Chief Corcoran doubting that he did. If they were wrong on this, isn't it possible they were also wrong about not causing the bruising to Adriana's face? After all they saw was this single, small, circular bruise. But that had morphed into the dense linear bruises that Sharon Thomas and Don Wybrew saw less than 30 minutes later. Of course, it would be fair to say this is sheer speculation. But when I was initially reading through the trial transcripts, I took note of something that Travis Cook testified to. Recall that he's the EMT who took over for the first responders. And here's what he testified to at trial.
Would you tell these ladies and gentlemen what you saw when you arrived, sir?
Arrived on scene and found Esto Fire Department there with their fire truck. Two or three of their firemen there. The chief and another one of his firemen had the victim trying to sort of holding her, I don't want to say upside down, but face down, trying to push water out, clear her airway, and then, of course, we pulled up and took over from there.
Now, if you're like me, you picture two possibilities in your head. The first is that Jose Martinez was holding Adriana by the shoulder in midair while Chief Corcoran tried to push water out. The second, though, is that Jose Martinez was holding Adriana by the shoulder with her forehead against the ground while Chief Corcoran tried to push the water out. After reading the trial transcripts, I read Lead Agent Mike Aureli's investigative report. In it, he references a reenactment that Chief Corcoran did for him on the afternoon of August 13, 2007, 5 days after Adriana drowned. In the report, Raley wrote the following. Later that afternoon, at approximately 3 p.m., Major Hamilton and I also conducted a videotaped interview with Esto Fire Chief Charles Corcoran. He demonstrated the techniques he used to attempt to resuscitate Adriana. He stated that he should not have caused any trauma or injuries to her forehead. I'll repeat that last line, quote, he stated that he should not have caused any trauma or injuries to her forehead. Recall that this is consistent with how Chief Corcoran testified at trial.
Then 4E, did you do anything to cause those injuries, sir?
No, I did not do anything that would produce those injuries.
Well, luckily for us, we don't have to rely on Raleigh's report. That's because the reenactment was recorded, and here's the pertinent portion.
Now, when you pick her up, her head would stay on the ground like this?
Yes.
Okay,
she never gravity to work for me.
Okay. Did her forehead ever come around in contact with the ground?
I am going to say yes in the process.
Okay. Was there any, when she was like this, there any blows or anything that would cause any trauma through her head?
Yes, I did give her back blows initially to clear anything that was there. There was that combination of vomitus, and it was in that afternoon point. I thought there could even be food stuck in there, and I did give her at least four back blows in the sequence of trying to clear it out.
It's hard to understate just how disturbing and disgusting all this is, because it proves that Jose Martinez did not hold Adriana midair while Chief Corcoran tried to clear Adriana's mouth of water. Instead, Jose Martinez was holding her down, forehead against the ground, while Chief Corcoran delivered at least four back blows to Adriana's upper back. How could Prosecutor Larry Basford allow Chief Corcoran to testify at trial that he didn't do anything that could have caused the injuries in Adriana's forehead when he knew full well about this reenactment? A reenactment which Chief Corcoran literally said that his back blows while Adriana was facing the ground would have caused trauma to her head. Moreover, he did these back blows while Jose Martinez was holding her down. How did one small circular bruise in Adriana's forehead transform into a series of dense linear bruises accompanied by bruising on her right shoulder? This could provide a pretty good explanation for the jurors, but they never saw or heard about the reenactment at trial. And they weren't alone. The reenactment also wasn't shown to the state's surrogate medical examiner at trial. So how did she testify? And why didn't the pathologist who performed the autopsy testify for the state? Next time on Undisclosed.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Toyota salutes those who've served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.
Hey, Undisclosed listeners, it's Meethal, executive producer of Undisclosed Toward Justice. As you know, we did something new a few months ago by utilizing SpeakPipe as a way for you guys to leave us voice notes. For anyone new here, you can go to speakpipe.com/undisclosed to leave us your questions or thoughts and comments. Since the response to SpeakPipe has been so amazing, we've got two additional exciting announcements to make. First, we have a new Facebook community group where you can engage with us and one another about all things true crime and criminal justice. Just go to facebook.com/groups/toward justice and answer three simple questions and you're in. In addition to that, we also just relaunched our Patreon page at patreon.com/undisclosedpod. So many folks have already signed up, and we can't express our gratitude enough to each and every single one of you. Even a dollar goes a long way and allows us to do the work pro bono for our defendants. Also, I would like to give a quick shout out to Hannah McCarthy for audio production, as well as Patrick Cortez and Ramiro Marquez for our theme music. To engage with us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Undisclosed Podcast. You can find us on TikTok, YouTube, and X at Undisclosed Pod. Whether you're new or a returning listener, you can check out our previous cases and bonus episodes by going to our revamped website at undisclosedpod.com. If you would like to follow Colin and Rabia on social media, you can follow Rabia at Rabia2, the number 2, on Instagram, and Colin at EvidenceProf on Instagram, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you for your continued support for us and for supporting our sponsors. Until next time.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA salutes those who've served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.